Hello and welcome to Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us here. 4 o'clock hour. If you're a 9 to 5er, this is the sprint run. 53 minutes, 39 seconds until we get to that finish line there. And I appreciate so much you spending that time with us here as we give attention to all things economic and financial here on Dollars and Cents. And as we're doing so, we're taking sometimes a look at things macro, global, if you will, understanding what's happening around us, certainly with regards to large trend sorts of things and how they impact us and how they impact other economies and the kinds of decisions that are made with regards to fiscal and monetary policy, you know, all that stuff you were supposed to be listening to in Econ 101 there. But we try to make it interesting, so hang with us here as we go through it. But you also know that we break it down to an individual level, meaning that we're talking about things that perhaps are pertinent to you or to family members or colleagues or other folks that you may know here as we're talking about sometimes specific strategies. Stocks, we're going to be doing it again here today. We're going to be talking about some stocks that are out there, some positive, some negative. But again, in doing so, you remember as a previous listener to Dollars and Cents that nothing that we're talking about here is intended as a specific recommendation for you. Meaning that even though we're talking on these companies and strategies or funds or ETFs, heck, we may even throw in a little bit of Bitcoin today. So hold on for that as we get into to that end of things. That again, in doing so, it's not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold. Everybody's situation is unique. We strongly, strongly recommend that you reach out to your tax advisor, to your financial advisor, or if you'd like to reach out to us at North Main Financial Group, love to hear from you. Love to chat about your particular financial situation and to see if there are ways in which we might be able to be helpful to you. Online, you can find us at northmainfinancial.com. That's north like the direction, main like the street, financial.com. Northmainfinancial.com. We have a contact page on there. Leave us an email address or a phone number. Let us know the most preferred and desirable ways for us to contact you. Again, at northmainfinancial.com. Financial.com. You're also welcome to call us in the studio here. Love to hear from you because we'd love to hear about the kinds of things that are catching your eye in terms of headlines or if there are specific items, subject matters with which you may be dealing where you'd like us to give some thought and attention to it. Love to hear from you. Love to include those as part of the show here. Obviously not going to speak into specific recommendations for specific people. You know that. I say that all the time that we can't do that on the air here, but certainly in a general sense, happy to talk about those particular kinds of things. And I'm also happy to let you know what I don't know as well, but certainly happy to give it a crack. And if we don't know, certainly we'll say that as well. But you can call us in the studio here, 844-STUDIO-4. That's 844-788-3464, 844-788-3464 here in the studio at WSIC. Appreciate so much hanging with us here on Dollars and Cents. This week's version, let's get into it. What's hot? What's out there right now? All kinds of stuff. I mean, I literally on fire. I appreciate you, Producer Bill. Thank you. I know, I get excited about this kind of stuff. You might be rolling your eyes and taking a deep sigh. Too bad. This stuff is exciting to me. I really do enjoy it. Let's get the academic part out of the way here first. Let's talk about the Federal Reserve. And not because you want to talk about the Federal Reserve over dinner at a cocktail party, but because they do impact so much of what we do. If you listen to me talk here week after week, you know I talk a lot about the Federal Reserve, especially here over the last couple of years. That's intentional. And it's because it touches very nearly every single one of our lives in some way, shape, or form. It really does. Because, well, you may look at the overnight lending rate or the interbank rate as it is in terms of lending between member institutions of the Federal Reserve. You'd be like, okay, well, that doesn't have a whole lot of impact on my paycheck or how I put food on the table or how I pay the rent or the mortgage. Yeah, it does. Actually, literally, it does. And maybe not in a one-to-one direct kind of way, but it literally has an impact on the rates you pay. It has an impact on the costs of things, auto loans, truck loans, credit card debt, student loans. I mean, just about everything in some way, shape, or form. If you've got savings in the bank, the rates that are paid on your savings, on your money market account, why some banks pay higher, why some banks don't pay as well. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on in today's show. How does that all go together? It all impacts us. It literally does. And then when you think about it from a consumer standpoint, which you remember, 2/3 to 3/4 of our economy is absolutely impacted by consumer spending, meaning it is a function of consumer spending. So when we're looking at that, we're looking at what then producers pay in terms of or their cost in order to produce what we consume, what we buy. When their costs go up, I know nobody likes this, but so do our. So do our costs go up. So it's very, very important to keep that kind of thing in mind. Very important to be mindful of what the Federal Reserve is doing. The reason why I'm bringing that up here, and you've heard me talk about this now for the last couple of, weeks. Let's call it several months. I'll give it to you. 2 years that I've been talking about this. And the reason why is because we had this significant escalation in interest rates here in the course of a very short amount of time. Now, at this point, it's been close to a couple of years. You may be saying, well, that's not exactly overnight. I'll grant you that. But relative to how fast and how much those rates have moved, historic. Because usually we move in small bite-sized pieces over a fairly extended amount of time. Because we are a large economy, especially with regards to the overall world economy. And so we shouldn't, move very, very quickly, either positively or negatively. That can be disruptive to the overall financial system. We moved fast. We really did. You heard me talk about some of the negative impacts that I thought would happen as a result of that. Several of them haven't happened, frankly. A couple did, but several of them haven't happened. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the show as well. But one of the things that definitely has been true in looking at that is that as the rates have increased, there has been continuous talk about when the rates would decrease. We do that. It's market talk. We got to fill up the airwaves. I feel like sometimes, at least on our business news shows, not pointing out anybody in particular. I understand they got to sell advertising and do all those kinds of things. I'm just giving it to you straight here, right off the top. So there was a whole lot of talk towards the end of last year about not only when, but how much rates would be cut here in 2024. Well, friends, we just crossed over the first quarter mark here, and this isn't an I told you so moment. This is just looking at 30 years of my personal involvement in this process. We're pretty much landing where we thought we would land towards the end of last year, meaning me looking at it from last year. And again, not pointing at myself, but really looking at it's just mathematically impossible. Last year, there was in the futures markets, you've heard me say this now a couple of times, a pricing for 7 rate cuts this year. 7. I mean, we just went through an astronomically historical movement and increase in rates, and we were talking about cutting rates 7 times in the course of 1 year. Well, that's not practical. So by the time it got to about February, it was priced down to 3 cuts, and now here we are cruising through mid-April. We're priced to about 1.5, which is interesting. Sidebar, think about it. Can't have a half of a rate cut. Either have a rate cut or you don't have a rate cut, but that's the crazy way the markets work sometimes. So we're between 1 and 1.5. And now there is significant conversation. And actually, literally, even as of today, several of the federal board governor members, board of directors, are giving speeches today, which they do constantly, by the way. That's not a unique kind of thing. I think 4 of them are giving speeches today that are public. And all of them, I know almost to a T, are going to be talking about the fact that they're not going to be very quick to recommend to cut rates. Very interesting. That's not a complete 180, but very nearly a 180 from what Chairman Jay Powell was talking about towards the end of last year when he was talking about multiple rate cuts. I would agree. We're not in a space where we should be cutting rates at this point. We're really not. We barely know the effects of the rate increases. How can we start cutting rates before we actually understand what's going on economically with the increase end of things? So that's really where we are at this point. So we're very mindful that we're watching that. I know the equities markets just want so much for there to be a cut in interest rates. And every time there's even a breath of an indication, the markets go straight up. You may even be one who wants that as well. But from an economic health standpoint, truly, and I know you may not like to hear this, truly, we shouldn't be cutting at this point. There'll be a time. Hold on. Be a long-term investor. We'll get there. Well, friends, thank you so much for hanging with us here on this week's version of Dollars and Cents. We're going to hear from our sponsors now here on WSIC.
More of Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie is coming up on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. It's Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us. Second quarter football reference here on Dollars and Cents. You know, producer Bill, we are, since the last Dollars and Cents show, we are now 1 complete week closer to football season.
I'm here for it.
I've thought about actually just making it completely mind-numbing and having some kind of chart up here which would have red X's on it, counting down the days and weeks. I thought that might be a little bit obnoxious, so I just keep saying that we're one week closer on that end of things. But it's baseball season. I got to give a little bit of a shout-out to friends and folks, clients in the Pittsburgh region who came out of the gate strong, 6-1.
They look good.
Hope springs eternal, especially being a Pirates fan, a Pirates baseball fan, a little bit like being a Panthers football fan.
Sure.
You figure out who the real ones are.
Right, exactly.
Pretty quick, because there's been some challenges, yes, in finding the positives here recently. So I don't care if it's, you know, the first, what, you know, 10th of the season.
Right,
I'll ride the bus.
Yeah.
I will. I got no problem with that.
Absolutely.
But anyhow, so it's been good. How about the Orioles?
They're looking good. Looking good.
And they probably are. You're too modest to say they're probably right at the top there.
Yeah, we're right where we want to be.
I knew you were going to say
under
that.
Under the radar.
I love it.
We'll be quiet for a little bit longer.
That's right. Well, it only matters when you get to about September,
that's
right?
That's it.
That's when it all comes to fruition.
Football season.
We'll be talking baseball and football during that time. No doubt about it. But I appreciate so much hanging with us here on Dollars and Cents. Yeah, you're going to get sports. You're going to get food. You're going to get all kinds of stuff. Are you kidding me? Don't tell me that it's not financially impactful. I'm reasonably short. Now, Producer Bill, I'm coming right back to you on this. So we just had the draft of the WNBA here within the last week.
Yes.
Caitlin Clark. Boy, if you watch anything sports related, and my gosh, if you got a chance to see her play on television and, of course, in person, unbelievable women's basketball player out of the University of Iowa, number one draft pick in the WNBA, made a lot of noise. Number one all-time scorer, men's or women's basketball.
Yes.
Number one all-time scorer. I mean, beat Pete Maravich. That record's been around, gosh, I'm going to date myself, 50 years at least. I mean, it had to be 50, 60 years ago that he was in college. And it's been around a long time. Unbelievable. I mean, pretty much when she crosses the half court line, it's fair game.
Yes.
I mean, it's fair game.
What a gift.
And I don't mean just shooting it. I mean making it.
Right.
Coming in. Anyhow, the only reason I'm saying that is from a dollar standpoint, I'm going to wind this into finances here, that the salary that she's being paid, meaning relative to being a WNBA professional basketball player, relatively speaking, and I'm saying this relative to what I'm going to say next, relatively speaking, quite modest.
Sure.
I mean, it is a very modest salary relative to what she's actually going to be making. I want to say it's under $100,000 a year.
I think it's like in the 73.
$73,000 a year in terms of salary for playing for the team.
Correct.
But then I just saw this come across the headlines. One of the reasons why I'm bringing it up. Nike, ticker symbol, Nancy Kelly Edward, NKE, not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold Nike stock. That they're close.
She's got her own boot.
That's what I heard. It's close, but in terms of the numbers.
Right.
I think in terms of the product, they're already well along the way.
Sure.
That is. But in terms of the financials, in terms of what she's actually going to be compensated, it's close. And it's going to make that $73,000 a year she's making as an NBA, I think, a rounding error. That might be, you know, that might be the meal money,
right?
Based upon
a little walking around,
a little wham. That's exactly right, a little walking around money. And so it's going to be very interesting. But some of the projections that I've seen in terms of her total compensation, and I know this is true for so many professional athletes at the upper tier, at the very highest tier, where often their compensation for being a professional athlete, I don't know that it's to the extreme that Caitlin Clark's is, but is sometimes significantly less than what they're actually paid in endorsements. I'm thinking of Michael Jordan right now as an easy example.
Right.
Probably Tiger Woods, I mean, who's not making as much in terms of winnings on the tour, but still just from a brand standpoint, outrageously correct, lucrative in terms of any deals that they're signing there. I think Caitlin Clark's going to be similar. I mean, the numbers I'm seeing is like $8 or $10 million a year.
Yeah, anytime you link hands with State Farm, I can only imagine.
You're in
good company.
you know what I've always wondered, and I know State Farm is not a publicly traded company. They're actually what's called a mutual insurance company, which actually means the policyholders are the owners of the company, so not publicly traded. So this, I don't have to give the usual caveats there. But that being said, I have often wondered what Jake from State Farm earns.
Yes.
I mean, it's got to be good. I mean, if you have life,
the role of a lifetime.
I mean, literally. I mean, it just happened, and right. boy, did it pick up.
Right.
I mean, it is just amazing. I mean, that's the other thing. This would just be for just, you know, crazy folks like us. What was he doing before he got Jake from State Farm?
Right.
Like, I mean, really, what was it? I mean, was he like a meteorologist?
Right. I mean, you almost can't see him as anything else.
You really can't. I mean, he's typecast, so he's got to run the race now, because right, there's really not a, he couldn't act. You know, he couldn't do much from a public standpoint, because right. nobody. Well, I shouldn't say that. I can't imagine anybody looking at him going, well, that's Jake from State Farm. No matter what, you can't be serious. Yeah, sometimes it happens with actors, right?
Oh yeah,
and
absolutely.
Actresses that, you know, you get typecast a little bit. Like it's mm-hmm. like Will Ferrell,
tough box to get out of.
Can't really see him being in a in a docudrama.
Sure,
right? I mean, kind of typecast into that kind of thing. Same with Jake from State Farm. Anyhow, all the reason that we're saying that is that I don't know what the deal is between State Farm and Caitlin Clark, but it has to be spectacular.
Right.
I mean, you just look at when those commercials are being played. Mm-hmm. Those are not at the 3 o'clock in the morning kind
You're
of time
exactly
frames
right.
like the stuff that I'm watching, which right. is usually telling me to buy gold or I need to subscribe to something. Right. That's what's happening when I've watched there. How about that? You didn't think you'd get that on today's Dollars and Cents. You get a little Caitlin Clark, you get little Jake from State Farm, and who knows what? I'm sure the deal with Nike is going to be unbelievable.
Yes, good
that's,
for her.
That's going to be fun. Yeah, and well deserved. Right. Well deserved. It's going to be fun to watch that. Also fun to watch. Sidebar: it's going to be really fun to watch, I think, especially if you're a sports aficionado. But even if you're not, even just to watch it, what that's going to mean for the WNBA overall and women's athletics.
Correct.
I mean, there was some data we shared last week, maybe 2 weeks ago now, here on Dollars and Cents. We were talking about the viewership of the women's college basketball tournament exceeding top shelf.
Yes.
I mean, exceeding World Series.
Right.
It didn't exceed the Super Bowl, but it exceeded World Series, the NHL playoffs. I mean, all of these ones that were in the top 10, it exceeded all of them, which never has happened previously.
Right.
So when you look at some long range financial impacts on, you know, there are some who have postulated here, and this is just, you know, me looking at sports and the financials and all that, that Caitlin Clark has the possibility to be, which I think is a little unfair to characterize it this way at this point, because she's just at the front end of her career, but are already talking about how she may be having a Tiger Woods level financial impact on other female athletes.
Right.
You know, one of the things that Tiger Woods definitely brought, by any objective measure, to PGA Tour were significantly higher purses for golf tournaments.
Yes.
Because the viewership, I mean, really starting from, well, you know, first Masters 1997, so mid-90s on, mm-hmm. I mean, it did. It changed the world. I mean, yes, we had Jack Nicklaus, Arnie Palmer, you know, Chichi Rodriguez, all those guys who were absolute personalities. But in terms of the purses themselves, you know, those guys were making a lot of money outside of the tour.
It's a great point.
You know?
Raises the bar.
It does. And so it's going to be really interesting to see what that means with Caitlin Clark and women's athletics. Women's basketball, yes, but maybe women's athletics overall.
Right. Momentum like momentum.
Boy, put your mouth to God's ears. That's I'm going to write a trademark. What is that? What's
TM,
a boss? TM. Yeah, it's a trademark on there. It's real, and I hope that continues to be the case.
Sure.
Because we got some ground to make up. Personal opinion on that end of things there. All right. See, you didn't think you thought it was going to be Federal Reserve all day. Wait until you see some of the other stuff we got set up. You know what's coming next? Gold. No, really, gold. Now, you may not have gold sitting in your wallet, or you may not have gold sitting on the kitchen table there, but I got to talk about it here. And you may say, oh, you're talking about it because the price has gone up. Okay, I'll grant you that. That's probably the reason why I'm bringing it up here. Kind of interesting to watch the price of gold in the ways in which it has moved. I'm going to start with talking about what gold isn't. Gold is not a currency. By any stretch, even among nations. So the folks who say, well, it's a way of nations exchanging value, that is done on a very, very limited basis, and usually not among the largest, the G20, the group of 20. It's almost never. It's almost all digital at this point. But gold is used as an alternative asset in terms of the investing universe. And when I say that, I mean it's used as an asset, frankly, that isn't, this is going to sound a little weird, it isn't something else. and there is enough of a market that still exists for gold where that can continue to be a viable asset to trade. And I'm saying not because gold in and of itself doesn't have any value, but sometimes folks say, well, if everything, you know, goes upside down, at least we have gold. Well, and my immediate follow-up question to that is, okay, where? So you have gold and you're willing to use it for commerce or exchange or barter or however you believe, you know, if things move towards the apocalyptic stage of things, you can use it. Well, with whom and where? And I don't say that to cause any fear or concern when we're talking about gold, but I think there needs to be a more practical conversation about it and to call it what it is. We have been off the gold standard for over 50 years, so we're nowhere near in terms of the dollar being backed by gold, the hard asset. And so it's nothing like that. We are nowhere, we are a very limited use in terms of interbank exchange, meaning among nations. And we have, yes, industrial use, but that's not how gold is priced. It truly isn't. It's not priced based upon industrial uses by and large. It is used for industrial uses, but in relatively small quantities. So it may be in things like your watch or other electronics or on a computer chip wafer kind of thing, but usually not in very large quantities. So when we're looking at the practical aspect of things and the price has gone up, it's kind of interesting. I mean, it's kind of interesting to see. Why has it gone up? Is it inflation concern? Is it concern about the overall market? Is it concern about other asset classes that may have appreciated quite a bit? Maybe it's just been lagging behind, and it's something now to which folks are giving attention. Not real sure. We're going to talk about it in the next segment, though. I want you to hang with us here on Dollars and Cents as we're cruising through the hour. Getting to the halfway point here. Hang with us as we hear from our sponsors here on WSIC.
Keep it right here. Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie will return shortly on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC. Call now to speak with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie at 844-STUDIO-4. It's Dollars and Cents on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC.
Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie, thank you so much for hanging with us here. Second half of the show, third quarter, if you're counting here. Appreciate so much hanging with us. You still got a stretch run. You still got 26 minutes, 7 seconds until you get to the 5 o'clock hour, but I appreciate you spending that time with us as we're giving attention to all things economic and financial, again, here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. Now, as we're going to break, we're talking all kinds of things here. And, it's sometimes you think, oh, you're going to get a little academic, might get a little dry. Okay, I'll hand it to you. We got to get through the academics stuff sometimes. We were talking about athletics here, and I gotta come back to it because we were talking about I'm going to call it the Caitlin Clark phenomenon. I don't think that's a trademark. I don't think I can call that a TM there, but just amazing. If you're not familiar with Caitlin Clark, recently graduated University of Iowa, women's basketball player, number one draft pick in the WNBA draft here in the past week. And we were talking about how relatively small, on a relative basis, that her salary is for playing in the NBA. We were talking about it's like $72,000-$73,000 a year. Not saying that's small money. I'm just saying relative to what other professional athletes are often paid, that's a relatively small amount. And then looking at really what her overall compensation package probably is going to be. Well, we were just on break here, and producer Bill and I were listening to the Bloomberg Minute just on the break here. And the rumor, right? Well, can we can't say it's confirmed yet, right?
Because
we don't have a number. But
sure.
But if it's out there on Bloomberg,
right.
I mean, what does the chief, Justin, say that if it's on the internet, it's
right.
real? So if it's on the radio, it's right. real too, right? We'll just keep expanding that. And eight figures.
Whew. Yeah, even if it's the lowest possible eight figure.
That's exactly what I was thinking. If it is the first eight figure number, it is.
Good for her.
Wow. Good man alive. That's awesome. Mm. I mean, that has to be the biggest. I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, I can't. Now, I'm going to age myself here, and if you're close to my age and you maybe have the same lack of, let's call it hair prominence that I have, that a Mary Lou Retton, Mary Lou Retton, gymnast, Olympic gymnast, yeah, going back down memory lane, you got a producer, Bill, memory lane, they're back in the 80s. The only reason I'm saying that is she was on the front of the Wheaties cereal box, and well, I mean, she was in everything from Crest toothpaste ads. I mean, she was everywhere for a while. I would like to see, even in today's numbers, not in terms of what she was paid there back in the 80s, because obviously that number would be significantly smaller, but if you would inflate that to today's, I'm trying to think of another professional athlete who would be close. And she, I think she did well relative to that time frame. I don't think it was anywhere close to eight digits, meaning in terms of today's dollars. I can't imagine that it was.
Right, maybe the Williams sisters, but...
There you go. That's, you know, I was trying to think of a good example.
Right.
I'll bet Serena and Venus have done pretty well because they're in all kinds of stuff as well. But man, I can't think of anybody even remotely close after that. Amazing. Amazing. Now, I don't know. So here we are. We're just going to keep talking sports here in dollars and cents. This is big money. That's why we do it. Katie Ledecky. The swimmer. Who's going back to Paris. I mean, she's the anticipation is, I mean, just unreal expectations, almost Michael Phelps like expectations on the men's side here several Olympic series ago. That she's, I mean, obviously still continue to be the top. I gotta imagine she's doing well. I have no idea,
right?
Like what she represents, sponsors, or you know, those things, you know, for which she's being paid to represent. But it has to be pretty good. I can't imagine it's eight digits.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, eights.
That's a big number.
That's one signature.
That is,
you know, she's got more.
That's what I mean. If for eight digits, I'd be willing to sign my name a couple times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, every minute for the rest of my life. Not true. All right. So great stuff there. Talking about that. Go for it, Caitlin. No kidding. That's awesome stuff. And hopefully, again, as we were talking about here, some wide ranging impact for positive impact for women's sports overall. All right, let's keep going here. I was talking gold also as we were going to the break, and I was noting the price increase, notably the appreciation. And when I'm saying price increase, I'm looking at the spot price for a troy ounce, T-R-O-Y ounce, most commonly priced on the London Stock Exchange. So that's where that I'm looking at that number in terms, I mean, because there are several ways to price it. That's what I'm looking at. And so we're up 15-ish percent here year to date. So pretty notable appreciation coming off of a high single digit appreciation in 2023. So not, you know, it's not tech company like, but notable in terms of the increase in the pricing on it. So what does it mean at this point? You know us. We're not going to take single data points and extrapolate too far into them. But it's notable in terms of how it lines up next to other data points. And specifically here over the last couple of weeks where we've had a pullback in the equities markets, at least in the more aggressive end of the equities markets as priced out and as measured by our most popular stock indices. We got the Dow Jones Industrial Average about flat for the year now. Interesting because it was up about 7-9% here just a couple of weeks ago, and now about flat. NASDAQ has pulled back about 10%. NASDAQ Composite, which is mostly made of technology companies, large technology companies, has pulled back about 10% off of its high. And if you look at some of the more aggressive companies overall, meaning technology companies, individual companies, there are some that have pulled back 10, 15, 20% and more off their highs. So that, again, in and of itself, not a reason to say that one thing or another is happening. But then you see that the price of gold has increased as well. And I'm going to give you one other data point for discussion today, and that is the increase or the rise in yields at the long end of the interest rate curve. Now, don't lose me here. Keep on the board because I promise you this has real impact. We're actually getting to a space where we're getting more normalized as far as the yield curve is concerned. What I mean is that, generally speaking, if you buy a bond that has a longer maturity or longer duration associated with it, instead of it being 2 months but 2 years, maybe instead of 2 years, 20 years, you normally are paid more per year the longer the maturity is out. So you will normally, in a normalized yield curve, you would be paid more per year in interest on something that's 20 years instead of 2 years. Well, we haven't had that for the last several years. We've actually had what's called an inverted yield curve, meaning you were actually paid more on a yearly basis to have a shorter duration bond, meaning a 2 year would have a higher interest rate than a 20 year would have. That's called inverted. That's not normal. That's sometimes an indication of an upcoming recession. As a matter of fact, not going to get into the granularity about why that's the case, but it often is a harbinger or is an indicator of an upcoming recession. That hasn't happened. And so now we're starting to get a normalization. We're starting to get what we sometimes call the back end or the long end of the yield curve is starting to increase. And there's, you know, a lot of so-called experts are saying, oh, that's the reason why the markets are going to start to pull back. Well, except that what we're doing is we're normalizing the curve. We're not actually in a space where rates are rising arbitrarily, but we're starting to get to a space where the curve is starting to flatten, which is a good thing. That's a healthy thing, a healthy phenomenon to happen. We're not hearing that. At least I'm not seeing that on most of our business news channels or along those lines. So just we're going to keep watching that. Keep paying attention to that. That's a big deal. And it's a big deal because that tends to be an indication. Here comes the bottom line. It tends to be an indication of a healthy economy, which is very interesting. You've heard me talk a lot about that with the rise in interest rates that we've had here over the last couple of years. I expected that at least on a technical and academic level that we would be in some level of recession. Folks, we haven't had it. We really haven't. When you look at consumer spending, yes, we have increases in credit card debt. Yes, we have a slowdown, say, in automobile sales. We definitely have had a slowdown in residential sales, not a drop in pricing. That's not what I'm saying. The prices are still elevated. Prices are still high, but in terms of the number of transactions, we've had a slowdown in that end of things. So there are things that are indicating that the consumer is being, let's call it more cautious in terms of spending. Of course, every time I say that, we roll into Christmas season. And boy, they proved me wrong on that end of things. But at least at this point, we're looking at things that are a little bit more cautious in terms of consumer spending, but not a crash out, certainly not a recession at this point. Very interesting to see. We're going to keep watching that. Stay tuned here on Dollars and Cents on not only today's show, but on future shows as well, because we're going to keep bringing that data to you to make sure that you're aware of what's happening out there. All right, we're going to pivot here. So we talked about women's basketball. We've talked about the Federal Reserve. What would be a nice correlation? You got it. Bourbon. Now, you may not be one who enjoys bourbon. That's okay. What I'm going to talk about here is actually the phenomenal growth, specifically, of the consumption of bourbon. And again, you may not be one who likes bourbon or spirits or alcohol at all. Nothing at all wrong with that. I'm certainly not advocating for folks to either buy or consume on this end of things, but really just a phenomenon. And A, because we like to talk about food and drink here on WSIC. But really the exceptional growth in bourbon sales. And I'm looking here in the U.S., but I'm looking most especially overseas. I mean, we're seeing double-digit, like mid-teens growth on an annualized basis in China, and then really the largest growth, close to 20% a year right now in India. It's amazing. Talked to several folks who deal in commodities and specifically food-based commodities, talking about the exceptional growth trajectory right now that is in India. Now, I don't ascribe to that. I mean, 20% annualized growth, that's not normal. I mean, you can't, even with, and of course, their argument has to do with the population of India and that actually 20% growth can go on for an extended period of time. And I have to explain to them that 20% of a large number, actually relative to the ratio, is same as 20% of a small number. That's a whole separate side of the discussion. But anyhow, but the idea being, they're talking about volume. I understand what they're trying to explain. The volume at 20% of a large number is significantly higher. Absolutely true. And it is true. When you look at specifically bourbon and whiskey sales that are occurring overseas, specifically in China and most especially India, that it is an amazing trajectory. So again, like I said, you may or may not be one who partakes, but it is a fast-moving phenomenon, especially in the food universe. Things very rarely move at 20% per year annualized anything. That usually takes several years to do that. So kind of interesting. We're going to keep track on it. Maybe even partake in what's happening over there. Friends, stay with us here as we get to the fourth quarter here on Dollars and Cents, presented by WSIC.
We'll have more of Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie following these brief messages on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Now more of Dollars and Cents with certified financial planner Joshua Dobie on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Hello and welcome back to Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. I'm your host, Joshua Dobie. Thank you so much for hanging with us here. Fourth quarter, stretch run, 11 minutes, 27 seconds until you get to the 5 o'clock hour. I appreciate that you're spending the time with us here as you get to the finish line, especially if you're a 9-to-5-er, as we're giving attention to all things here, economic and financial. We've been all over the place, right? I mean, that's kind of the idea. I got to keep your attention, right? I mean, if I just sat here and read off a spreadsheet, which, I mean, when I'm not on the air, I do that a lot. Oh, really? No, you're right. I'm not the fun guy at the cocktail parties. I'm really not, because I really do like the spreadsheets. Not making them. I like reading them and understanding them. There are folks who are very gifted at making them, but I'm not that guy. But I do like reading them. Anyhow, not doing that too much on here on Dollars and Cents. Because, I mean, we've hit on, you know, again, Federal Reserve, interest rates, very important. Gold, prices of gold, very important, understanding where we are. Yeah, but we got Caitlin Clark, too, and bourbon. You know, that's kind of what we do here. All right. Now I'm going to bring another one into it. This will perk your ears up. I teased this up a little bit in the first segment of today's show. Now we're going to talk Bitcoin. And you may say, well, wait a minute, you said you couldn't talk about Bitcoin. Well, for a long time, from a compliance standpoint, this is for all my compliance friends who I know listen to every single show that I do every single week on here, that I couldn't talk about it because relative to my licenses, it wasn't a securitized asset, not to get into the granularity of it, but now it is with regards to ETFs or exchange-traded funds that make markets in either Bitcoin or in Bitcoin futures or options contracts or sometimes an amalgamation or collection or combination of those things. Talking about it here's going to be the 10-cent word for the day, all right? Dichotomous sort of sense, right? We have something that's very positive on one end, but then also this end of things, which is not all that negative. So let's talk positive first. Bitcoin crossed over, especially if you're a Bitcoin investor, and this is not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency for that reason. But in looking at it, that it crossed over the $72,000 figure in terms of valuation as measured by the most liquid markets that are out there in cryptocurrency. So a momentous occasion as far as hitting a high. That was just here several weeks ago. But while that was happening, Grayscale, I would call it a pioneer in terms of moving towards finding or developing, not just finding, it's not like it was out there and they found it, they developed it, developing a fund or developing a securitized asset or developing a vehicle, something which could be traded, which either tracked or just outright owned Bitcoin. They had the earliest one that to which I'm aware, and certainly the most liquid one about which I was aware in terms of being able to trade Bitcoin, specifically an ETF structure, exchange traded fund structure, a fund which you can trade literally like a stock or a bond on a second by second, minute by minute basis every time that the market is open. The only reason I'm saying that is very interesting commentary. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Very interesting commentary to hear that since November, when things really peaked out from an asset standpoint for the Grayscale ETF, the asset base inside of there has fallen over 50%. Very interesting, because it's really during that same time since November of 21 that we've had such an increase in terms of the valuation aspect of Bitcoin as well. Also, net withdrawals of over $16 billion. I find that very interesting. I think that's an indication of some other things. It's certainly not an indication of the price, or let me call it the purchasing, buying strength of Bitcoin. That has gone up significantly across the board. And actually, if you look at other ETFs or other securities, I'm looking at Fidelity, other entities that are out there which are trading in Bitcoin or have funds which are trading in Bitcoin right now, they have marked almost as the spot price of Bitcoin has marked, meaning they have increased notably during that time. I bring that up because Grayscale is such a pioneer, such a player in the securitized asset of Bitcoin, meaning the securitized trading of Bitcoin, and just found that interesting. So I'm not sure what that means. Is that there's some speculation because they have higher fees than Fidelity or Schwab has in trading of Bitcoin-related securities. That may be the case. Don't know that that's the case, but that may be the case. But certainly interesting, as the price has risen so much in this time frame, that they would have such a big pullback in their asset base. So we're going to keep watching that. Kind of, like I said, that's not completely an outlier in terms of a data point, because they are so Grayscale is so foundational in the Bitcoin security universe, but definitely something we're going to watch. And we're going to see if that's going to move through the balance of the market or whether it's an indication of something larger. We'll see what that is. All right, let's keep going here. Here as we go, looking at those things that are what's. So I got to bring up this one. This company, arguably one of the more recognizable ones on the planet. I mean, gosh, do I have to put it up there with something like Coca-Cola kind of thing? That's Tesla. Even if you don't own a Tesla, even if you've never bought a Tesla, even if you've never bought or driven an electric vehicle, it'd be hard not to be aware of Tesla and specifically its founder, CEO Elon Musk. I'm saying that because, again, not looking at them in a favorable light, Tesla's stock that's traded, TSLA, Tom, Sam, Larry, Alpha, not a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold Tesla stock. Has been on a, if you look at it over the last several years, been on almost a parabolic style trajectory. Amazing in terms of the appreciation. But it's gone through a rough patch this year. I want to say they're down off the high. I want to say they're down close, a little bit over 30% year to date. And that's just in a quarter and some change, a quarter and a couple of weeks. So pretty precipitous move in the negative here in a short amount of time. No postulation on my part about what that may or may not be the case. However, at least in part, due to the slowing down, significantly slowing down of sales of Tesla vehicles. Now, this is not unique just to Tesla. You've heard me talk about the EV sale slowdown end of things that, and actually the Chief Justin was even talking about here this morning on Good Morning LKN, which by the way, if you haven't listened to them, tune into them, 7 to 9, Monday to Friday, Good Morning LKN, Mamie, Bill, Justin, they're talking about all kinds of, they're talking about stuff that's fun, they're talking about, but they're also talking about serious stuff. They're talking about the slowdown that they have noticed through the news as well, and I certainly have on my end of things about the slowdown in vehicle sales overall. And the point was raised by the chief, and it's important to keep in mind. There aren't many folks out there on a relative basis when you're looking at the masses who are going to be able to absorb a 9-10+% per year auto loan. And we're seeing this. I saw a 12% or come across for a used car that a client was considering, 12%. On an auto loan, because you couple that with the fact that the prices are still ridiculously high. And I'm not saying that to speak poorly of our car dealership owners or folks who work at car dealerships or anything like that. I'm talking about in terms of how much they have grown, meaning the prices have grown in such a short amount of time. I mean, it wasn't all that long. I mean, the prices have grown really since COVID almost exponentially in that amount of time. So what's happening, and now blend this back to the EV universe, you know, EVs specifically, they're more expensive. They truly are. And they're more, let's call them in need of greater management than a regular car with an internal combustion engine, which you can fill up at any gas station around the country. Is not the same experience with an EV. You've either got to take it home every night, charge it at home overnight. You can't drive it as far. And if you're driving it on an extended spaces, you have to plan out very specifically where your chargers are. Those chargers take time, unless you can find a supercharger, and there aren't as many superchargers as there are standard chargers, all kinds of things that you need to keep in mind. And oh, by the way, as I mentioned in the front end, they're more expensive. So these are not inexpensive vehicles. It's not like they're getting to a price point that that makes them more attractive. It really is just an alternative means of collective transportation. And so when we're looking at that and taking a look at what, you know, Tesla's stock price coming down and now with the announcement, that's really what I was leading up to here, that they're going to be cutting 10% of their overall workforce. And and as that happened, literally almost real time, it was within a couple of hours, it was also announced that two of the C-suite executives at Tesla, including one who had been there, I want to say it's close to 20 years. He's been one of the ones from early on that was a part of the group that Elon Musk had put together. So we're talking about long timers here that also announced they're going to be leaving the company or retiring. And the coincidental announcement next to the layoff of staff and of employees, I say is probably more than mere coincidence, but probably lined up in such a way, maybe because of disagreement with Elon Musk or with the board or whomever may have made those kinds of decisions on a mass scale to be able to reduce the workforce by 10%. But it's indicative, at least in part, of the slowdown in sales of electric vehicles, specifically in this case of Tesla electric vehicles. Interesting that it correlates also with the announcement and beginning of distribution of the Tesla truck as well. Because that was supposed to be a pretty momentous occasion, moving into another market, or let's call it a corollary market, with regards to the next item to sell after the more standard EV car. And so to have this happen at the same time, kind of interesting. We're going to be watching that. It's a collection of data points. It's interesting to keep in mind. It's not in and of itself an indication of things slowing down, but as has been raised again by the folks on Good Morning LKN, I'm raising it again here. We're watching it because the consumer is omni-important. And if the consumer is starting to slow down, that may be an indication of other things economically as well. So we're going to be watching that. It certainly is a very important data point. All right. We are rapidly approaching the end of our time here on this week's version of Dollars and Cents presented by North Main Financial. Let's do a rapid recap here before we got to leave you for this week. Looking at the Federal Reserve, you know, they talked a lot about cutting rates at the end of last year. And now that talk seems to be really abating and really getting a lot quieter. I wouldn't anticipate, this is my commentary, I wouldn't anticipate that we're going to have any interest rate cuts this year short of some significant geopolitical shock to the system. So I don't anticipate that that's going to be the case. But we're going to be watching it, and whether you like it or not, rates are very much a part of all of our lives here. Then we got Caitlin Clark, 8-digit endorsement deal out there. That's going to be fun to watch. Gold prices rising, and then we're watching with regards to the automobile market as well. Is that an indication about where the consumer is spending? We're going to watch it. Appreciate so much you hanging with us here on Dollars and Cents, presented by North Main Financial. Tune in to us next week on Thursdays at 4 here on WSIC.
Serving you better than ever before. WSIC, Statesville. W290DK, Mooresville. W264CU, Statesville.